Hello, welcome everyone to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on JTS Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world with transformational businesses, thoughts, ideas, and actions that encourage and inspire. My name is Taylor Tagg. I am a forgiveness coach certified by the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training and a certified Napoleon Hill Foundation leadership instructor. I teach people precisely how to let go of hurt and resentments, both big and small, releasing emotional pain and suffering to experience lasting peace, freedom, and inner success. To find out more about my work and my latest book, The Path to a Peaceful Heart, please visit me at TheEvolvingHeart.com and sign up for my monthly newsletter. I'm also writing a new book with certified Napoleon Hill instructors Tom Cunningham and Tim Chim on Lessons from Adversity and Defeat to be published later this fall. You can check out more about the Triple T team at AdversityAndDefeat.com. Now to today's success story. My guest today is Nicole Lipkin. And Dr. Nicole Lipkin is a business psychologist at Equilibria Leadership Consulting, an international business solutions company based in the U.S. She is a firm believer that companies that understand the importance of developing their future leaders will find themselves in the best organizational standing when the older generations step out of their leadership roles and pass the baton to the next generation of capable leaders. She also specializes in crisis leadership and preparedness, helping leadership teams, organizations, and human capital effectively plan for and recover from crisis. Nicole was also the keynote lunch speaker at the 2013 Authentic Leadership Summit, September 30th, in Charlottesville, Virginia. And to find out more about the Leadership Summit, you can visit www.AuthenticLeadershipSummit.com. And Nicole is joining us on Journey to Success Radio today to talk about her new book, What Keeps Leaders Up at Night, and the Authentic Leadership Summit that's coming up soon. So, Nicole, welcome to Journey to Success Radio. How are you today?
Thank you so much for having me, Tyler. I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. Doing great today. Now, I want to talk a little bit about you and your business and how you work with leaders. So give us a little bit of background about what you do and how you help leaders.
Sure. Well, Taylor, I'm a psychologist by training, but I do leadership and organizational development. And what I focus on is, just again, from that kind of psychology background, kind of, I bring in human nature back into the workplace. I think one of the ways we've really gone wrong over the decades has been to kind of suck the life out of organizations a little bit and suck the life out of people, kind of operating against human nature. So really kind of understanding how our brains work and understanding group psychology and individual psychology, helping leaders understand those facets, really helps bring out the best in people and increases cultural engagement, individual engagement, and that's what I help leadership teams do, and also managerial teams. So that's a little bit about what I do and kind of my focus. So it's really bringing psychology to the workplace. But I do leadership development for teams, management development, and also executive and managerial coaching, as well as emerging leader coaching. So those are kind of my areas of specialty.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more, or at least for the listeners that are listening, about human nature and what that means in leadership. How does a leader bring back the naturalness of human nature?
I could go on for hours and hours about that, but just in general, if you think about it, just one basic thing in the workplace that we operate against, you know, the human mind is not designed to work straight for 8 to 10 to 15 hours a day. That's not what our body is. That's not how our bodies are designed. That's not how our minds are designed. Eventually, you lose focus. Eventually, concentration becomes difficult. And, you know, if you kind of look around, you have people getting agitated pretty quickly, people losing focus pretty quickly. You know, you drive to a supermarket to go pick up an item and you can't remember for the life of you why you drove to that supermarket or what item you had to pick up. The human brain is not designed to forget that easily and not designed to lose focus. We're also not designed to get very, very easily agitated. But as we do, these are kind of signs and symptoms that something's going wrong. And so these are examples of being overworked and overstressed and just kind of inundated with life. It's just that we don't pay attention to it. So I think the workday is a great example of working against human nature. It's that we've developed this concept based on a long, long time ago and the needs from a long, long time ago. We've developed this concept that you have to work 8 to 10 hour days. Again, most people are not designed to sustain attention for that long. However, if you start creating flexible workplaces, or if you start kind of integrating work and life, one of my most hated terms is work-life balance. I'm not sure when work and life are on opposite ends of the spectrum, but if you start integrating this and recognizing that people, you know, do have things to do during the day, but they can make it up at night, what you start creating is something that works a little bit more towards human nature and towards our basic needs. We have basic needs, and work is not the only need. We have other parts of our identity. So that's one example, kind of shifting that traditional focus and instead really analyzing who's working for you and then analyzing their individual needs. So I think that's a really good example of working against human nature and how we've done that. I mean, end of the day, we have a very unhealthy society. We all eat too much, we drink too much, we smoke too much, we work too much, we don't sleep enough, we fight too much. This is an example of a society that's been working way, 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 way too hard. We're on more psychiatric meds than we've ever been. People are dying younger and younger of stress-related illnesses. These are symptoms, and these are signs of what we've been doing all along perhaps is no longer working. So when I talk about operating toward human nature versus against it, I'm talking about things like that, looking at what the signs and symptoms are, and you know what, changing things a little bit, because we do have the ability to change. It's just that, and the ability to look at the workplace differently. It's just that as humans, again, change is one of those things that becomes incredibly difficult to do, and it's not just because we talk about it being difficult to do. It's because there's actually science behind why it's so difficult for us to change or look at something in a completely new way. That's some of the stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think change is really hard for a lot of people. We spend a lot of time trying to change the world around us to conform to our own way of dealing with the world. And, you know, really significant change comes from within. It's changing yourself, you know, to learn and to grow. And you mentioned flexibility in the workplace and really not being able to spend 8 to 10 hours a day in focus, and that's not our human nature. And I know that you wrote a couple of books, and one of those books is Why in the Workplace, Managing the Me First Generation. Can you speak a little bit about flexibility in the workplace and the up-and-coming generations that need some more of that flexibility in the workplace and what that kind of means?
Sure. Well, Why in the Workplace, Managing the Me First Generation, you know, like the title says, it's about Generation Y, the millennials in the workplace. But, you know, what I was looking at, you know, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a shrink. I really believe in order to work with people more effectively, and if you think about your own relationships, it's true. In order to do that dance with people, if you really understand where they're coming from or why they are the way they are, you're going to do that dance in a more graceful way versus stepping on each other's feet. So same with this generation. You know, we all think our generation's the best. I call it gen-centrism. We all think our generation's the best and everyone else is going to mess it up for the rest of us. And obviously that's some of the views that people have had of Gen Y, and myself included. I'm guilty of this too. But there's a reason, again, with every generation, there's kind of an ethos, there's a psychology, there's a personality of the generation. And the same with Gen Y. And when you look at what's shaped a generation, you're looking at upbringing, education, global influences, social influences, technological influences. And every generation has had these influences, including Gen Y, and that's why they show up in the workplace looking a little different. However, at the end of the day, Gen Y has the same basic desires out of work as the rest of us do. It's just that they might have been a little bit more outspoken about it. And they're such a large generation, about 79,000, 80,000, equivalent to the boomers. So they're really powerful. And when you look at work-life integration and that flexibility, you know, again, that's one of the shapers of a generation are the global influences. And if you think about it, Gen Y, you know, every generation has had their end of the world feeling. The older boomers were hiding under, you know, their desks during bomb scares and then gathered together and shown 16-millimeter films about what was happening in a very structured, organized way. And every generation has had their end of the world film. No one has had it worse or better. And your Gen Y, during their formative years, they were walking through metal detectors to get to their kindergarten classes. They were watching the Columbine shootings. During their formative years, they were watching the planes crash into the World Trade Center. And again, I'm not saying it's worse or better. Every generation has had it. So here's the difference. Where the boomers, or the older boomers, were hiding under desks and then shown 16-millimeter films, the millennials, at a touch of a button, were inundated with this information, this constant access, this constant inundation of the images of that trauma and that horrific experience. And, you know, as I don't know if you remember back to that, I certainly do. We all were vicariously traumatized, regardless if we knew someone in the trade centers or in New York.
Absolutely.
Just watching those images over and over and over again, they impact your brain and they impact your brain chemistry. We were adults, and even though we didn't have the life context to understand it, we still could talk about it in some shape or form. Imagine being a kid or a young teenager having that invincibility, and then all of a sudden having no life context and watching this, and no parent could protect their child from this information. So you fast forward to the workplace, and you have a generation that's saying, you know what, I don't want to wait till I'm 65 to retire and then see the world and experience my life. I want it now. And they are absolutely right. They're absolutely right. Again, like I was saying before, we've done it wrong. We're dying young of stress-related illnesses. We're overdoing everything. We're on more psych meds, like I was saying before. This generation thing, I don't want that. I want that integration. I want that flexibility now. They have it right. And the truth is what generation doesn't want it? It's just that we were all raised a little differently. And we were all raised, our expectations of work were very different when we were entering the workforce. I'm an Xer. My expectations of work were different than a boomer entering the workforce or than a millennial entering the workforce. So you have a very outspoken generation, and I think in this area they're speaking up right. And there are organizations that are responding, and the ones that are not going to respond, it really comes down to a competitive advantage. No one has to respond. But the ones that are responding are the ones that are going to be able to retain and engage really great millennials. Because, again, they're responding to our human nature, which kind of ties more into the current book that just came out. But that's my thought. That's my thinking on the millennials and flexibility.
Well, and I think you've hit on a really important topic here. I think a lot of boomers, especially here at leadership positions, are finding themselves asking the questions, how do I manage the Xers and, more importantly, the Y generation, because it's such a different concept of what they grew up, learning and experiencing in life. And I know you've written another book, a new book, of what keeps leaders up at night, you know, recognizing and resolving your most troubling management issues. And I know this is probably part of that equation, but speak to your new book here on what keeps leaders up at night.
Yeah, well, this book was really fun, and this also is going to tie into the keynote that I'll be doing at the Authentic Leadership Summit. This book was really fun. This is about the way we mess up as bosses or as leaders or as managers or really as anyone, but it's looking at the psychology and neuroscience behind these mess-ups. So it's kind of, in a way, about leadership derailers, but rather than saying, do this, do that, it's really looking at why we do this. So, you know, for example, there's a chapter on change, and I find change most fascinating. It's one thing to say, yeah, it's hard to change and you have to do it, but it's another thing when you start figuring out why it's so hard to change and what all those funky things that are happening psychologically and neurologically in your brain and why it's so hard. And personally, as I was writing this, I learned so much. You know, I knew this, but it was kind of like, from my psych background, like, it was kind of bringing up old information that I'd forgotten. And just becoming cognizant and aware of it again really helped me make some changes that I needed to make in my own leadership and my own businesses and my work with other leaders. But take change, for example, I think that's a great one. So when you're forced to change, your brain reacts the same way as it would react if a gun was held to your head. Your brain doesn't know the difference of whether or not you're being forced to eat a banana for breakfast versus the same yogurt you've eaten every day of your life, or if there's a gun to your head. The brain doesn't know the difference. It just responds the same way. So when you think neuropsychologically what's happening in your brain, you're going through the fight-flight response every time you're forced to change. But then on top of that, all of these crazy, funky psychological biases are at play all the time, which make it so, so hard. Now, once you become aware of it, once you realize what you're doing, then you can actually make a change to that or avoid it. But, you know, the experience writing this book, actually, you know, it came from my own experience of going from being a good boss to a bad boss temporarily. I had had, and I'll be speaking more about this at the keynote, but I had hired someone who I shouldn't have hired. I had a bad gut feeling before I hired her, but I did it anyway. And she was horrendous in her role, in her job. But I was really convinced I could coach her. I like coaching people, obviously. It's part of what I do. And I was just convinced that I could help change her and develop her skills. The thing is, she was just a terrible fit for this role and a terrible personality fit for the culture of my company. But kept on going, and the more money and time and effort and emotion I put into it, the less I was able to loosen my grip and let her go. And it cost me thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in accounting errors because she kept on making so many mistakes. And also, I think she spent a year or two of my life with the amount of stress I was experiencing working with her. And, you know, I just refused to admit that I had made such a bad mistake hiring her. And obviously, from day one, working with her, I became a bad boss. And I'm a good boss, but I became a bad boss. Like, I was doing everything I shouldn't have done. But I was really fascinated. Once that kind of reign of terror ended, I was really, the whole experience inspired me to write this book. Because it's so easy how quickly we can go from really good to really bad when we're not acting with self-awareness. And when I look at that situation, you know, I had just invested so much money, time, and effort that I continued doing that. Well, that's called the sunk cost bias. That's something that major companies do and really great leaders and everyone on this planet does. It's when you put time, money, and effort in something, you're less likely to give it up. You're more likely to keep on putting your time, money, and effort into it, even though it might not be paying off. And you look at one of the greatest examples of that, the Concorde, the supersonic plane that was developed by the French and British governments. It was a complete money loser. Yet they kept on putting more and more money, time, and effort into it because we are less willing, our brains are less willing to let go when we've had such an emotional investment in something. So even learning these little things, and that's what this book is about, all the little things that happen that derail us as leaders. But it provides the reader with the self-awareness because, again, once you know this stuff, then you can actually catch yourself in action doing it or catch other people in action. But it did stem out. It wasn't my muse of my really bad employee. I'm glad I went through that experience at least.
Yeah, and I think that was a great experience and a great example of, yeah, some of the work that I do, too. I talk about, you know, forgiveness in the workplace and the art of letting go. And you got to know when to let go of something. When it's not going to work, you have to be willing to make a change. And, again, I'm really shocked to hear that change is like holding a gun to your head. I've never heard that before, but it makes sense. It makes sense because we're so resistant to change. It's just we do everything to avoid it.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's very natural, you know, when you talk about confirmation bias, which is, you know, the old favorite. We as humans, we want to see what we want to see, and we want to hear what we want to hear. So, man, we will do everything. We will do everything to see what we want to see and hear what we want to hear. and completely deny information coming into our brain. And that's part of the problem with change. It's that often we don't want to see the need, or we don't want to see what other people might be saying to us because of all this other stuff going on. So I actually think at the end of the day, the funky biases that go on in our brain are really the most fascinating. They're kind of funny. And once you become aware of them, they're really funny to watch in other people when they start happening. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So let us know. I know the listeners here that are really interested in your work and your books. Tell us how we can get in touch with you and where do we go to find out more about you, Nicole?
Well, I can direct you to my website, which is www.equilibrialeadership.com, which is EQUILIBRIA, leadership.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn as Dr. Nicole Lipkin, or just do a Google search and there I will be. And the books you can buy, What Keeps Leaders Up at Night or Why in the Workplace, Managing the Me First Generation, are Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any bookstore or online bookstore.
And again, I'm really fascinated about What Keeps Leaders Up at Night. I think that title just grabs people because they probably stay up late at night thinking about their teams and what they have to do to get the results that they're looking for. And I know you're going to be speaking as the keynote speaker at the Authentic Leadership Summit coming up on September 30th in Charlottesville, Virginia. And for those listeners out there who are considering going or in the area, can you give us a little snippet of what we can expect from you at that Leadership Summit and what we can look forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited about this. So the keynote is called I'm a Good Leader, So Why Do I Sometimes Act Like a Bad One? And what I've found in my research and from the work I do, you know, again, like I was saying before, all of us are susceptible. All of us can be phenomenal bosses or phenomenal leaders, but we're also susceptible from becoming temporarily bad on occasion. And because we're human, and again, we're fallible. So what this looks at is the three most common personal leadership dwellers. Because it's very easy to sit and blame everyone else for your problems and blame annoying employees or market, you know, the market conditions or competitors. It's very easy to point fingers outside. But there's three things that all of us go through on occasion that actually make us flip from good to bad temporarily. And, you know, just to give you a little preview, I won't get into detail, but we go good to bad on occasion from being too busy to win, too proud to see, and too afraid to lose. And so I'll at the keynote, I'll be talking about all the funky things that happen to us, you know, in groups, in our own individual psychology, and in our brains that make us go from good to temporarily bad. And the thing is that when I talk about this, we all can relate to one another with this. And these are kind of the things that happen and that you, like, smack your head off, you're like, I can't believe I did that. So that's what I'll be talking about at the keynote. And like you know, with the Authentic Leadership Summit, from what I know is that people can register until September 20th, and the summit itself is going to be held on September 30th at the Boar's Head Inn in Charlottesville, Virginia. And there's also a special rate for summit guests. They just need to call the Boar's Head and let them know they're with the AL, the Authentic Leadership Summit, when they make reservations. And the theme, Taylor, this year is leading employee engagement. And there's three tracks to choose from: leading employee engagement, the engaged leader, and power thinking leadership, which is pretty cool. And the total cost is $299, and there's going to be over 200 leaders from around the nation and world. And the focus is on mid to senior level leaders. And it's pretty cool because each session is going to end with a small group facilitated discussion. And then there'll be definitely follow-up 4 to 6 weeks after the summit. So it looks like it's going to be a really, really cool, fun event.
Yeah, I think it will. We interviewed Michelle Braden from Authentic Leadership Summit last week, and we talked in pretty good details about the summit itself. We talked about the three tracks, which were really, I thought, fascinating. We talked about two. It was really hard to decide which track to go to because all three really you know, speak to employee engagement, especially to leaders in the workplace, and also have over 200 leaders who are, you know, basically working through the same issues and problems in their own workplace. And so it would be a great opportunity to share information. And so if you're interested in that, again, in Charlottesville, Virginia, on September 30th, you can visit AuthenticLeadershipSummit.com and find out all about the summit. I think it's going to just be a wonderful, wonderful event for everybody who's involved. And Nicole, so I want to ask you a couple more questions here before we wrap this interview up.
Sure.
But really, tell me about the leaders that you work with, whether it's dealing with Generation Y or issues in the workplace, and what happens or what happens to them? What are some of the mindset changes that you see in some of your clients when they work with you? What are some of the things that you experience?
Well, really, I've been lucky enough to experience a broad range of changes, from individual changes to really pretty amazing cultural changes. So on the individual side, what I tend to see, and again, this is gradual, but and I know this word sounds cheesy, but I tend to see kind of a growth in self-awareness, insight into their own personal functioning, and also, most importantly, their impact on other people, the power, and how they influence. So, again, when I'm coaching leaders, we work on a broad range of issues, and different issues come in, you know, whether it's communication, influence, strategy, decision-making, whatever it might be. But I often see a real shift in, first of all, presence, second of all, influential communication, and third of all, which is the most important, a real development of self-awareness on, again, their own skills, but also their impact on other people. My favorite thing to see, though, when I work with leadership groups or management groups, is a shift in culture. And because when I work with companies, I really spend time getting to understand, like most consultants, getting to understand the culture and getting to understand the dynamics of people in the culture. And I work with companies over a pretty long period of time, and it is the most incredible feeling to walk in on day one and compare that feeling when you're walking in a year from then or 2 years from then and seeing that difference in the cultural shift and that vibe you feel from an organization. That's when I know things have worked. And ultimately, when we start looking at their stats and their numbers and outcomes, you see a decline in turnover. You see increased retention. There have been, you know, we've coupled engagement surveys. You've seen increased engagement. And people, just the performance and productivity, just unbelievable results when that culture shifts, because the leadership team has actually taken ownership and really invested and seen the tie-in of their impact and their decisions. So that's my favorite change to see. But, you know, again, it's I also think, you know, when, even though I do a lot of work around Gen Y and kind of educating teams about that and helping people look at creative management strategies, it's, when I'm working with companies on that issue, in my mind, it's not just about the millennials at all. It's all of our changing expectations, so I try to make that very clear. It can't just be about 20-somethings. If you make it just about 20-somethings, everyone else is going to get really annoyed, and rightfully so. It's about all of our changing expectations as technology has influenced us, as global changes and social changes have influenced us. So all of us are shifting. So when I work with management leadership teams, it's about coming up with more creative, more human-based management and leadership strategies. So that's really cool when you see a company shift or a leadership team integrating the way they look at people and the way they treat people and their programs that they start implementing and how that trickles down. So these are things I feel incredibly lucky to be part of with the clients that I work with.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun. At the end of the day, it is fun. It's about people having fun, and it's about being down to earth, and that's what tight business does not have to be so uptight. It can be more chill and down to earth and really tap into what we all enjoy. Because work can be fun and meaningful and all of that. It doesn't have to be such a grind all the time.
Absolutely. And of course, I want to kind of end this interview up with our Journey to Success original question, which is, what is it really? What's the thing that drives you to be successful, Nicole? And you can wrap that up with what you want to leave with our listeners for today.
What drives me to be successful? I didn't even say the word. Successful.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, a couple of things. And again, this sounds trite. I really did what I do. And I absolutely love what I do. And I am no different. I think what drives me to be successful is I am no different. I don't have to waste any energy because I am no different in my personal life than I am in my professional life, than I am when I'm doing a keynote, than I am when I'm, like, working out doing CrossFit. I really am the same person. So I have found a career that actually allows me 100% consistency across settings. So I don't have to waste energy anywhere else. I don't have to waste energy, like, acting different ways. And I really believe in what I do. I really believe in kind of spreading the word about psychology and human nature and helping people have it a little easier once they understand this stuff. I think that helps me. And, you know, there's something called emotional contagion. When you're kind of upbeat and positive, but not annoyingly upbeat and positive, you know, it spreads around. You can't help it. And that, I think, is the most phenomenal, interesting human trait thing that I think is so cool. Like, we mimic each other. And our brains, our emotional centers, our limbic system, do an emotional tango with one another. So when you're kind of generally kind of upbeat, motivated, driven person, it spreads like wildfire. And I get to surround myself with great people. And it spreads. And it's an awesome feeling. And I think that's what makes me successful. I love what I do. I'm around great people. And it spreads.
Well, great. And again, for the listeners here, you can catch Nicole at the Authentic Leadership Summit coming up September 30th in Charlottesville, Virginia. To find out more information about that, check it out on the website, which is AuthenticLeadershipSummit.com. Again, we want to thank you, Nicole, for joining us today. You're listening to Journey to Success Radio Network. Find out more about the network, visit us at JourneyToSuccessRadio.com. And we'll see you soon for our next amazing success story. Bye for now.